Hello and welcome to this Microsoft TechNet session on Recipient Management, Policies, Permissions in Exchange Server 2007. My name is Robin McManus. Let's start the session by going into more detail on exactly what we will be covering. Today we're going to discuss the recipient management model, which has changed since Exchange Server 2003. There are a number of things we'll cover here, most notably how Exchange Server 2007 handles resources. In 2007, resource mailboxes are explicitly typed and have specific and appropriate properties. For example, a room resource has a capacity property. This typing is also applicable to other recipient objects. The other major thing we'll be discussing is changes to the administrative permission model. In Exchange 2007, you have the option to separate your Active Directory administration from your Exchange administration. During the session, we'll see how that's achieved. That separation may not suit everyone, so we'll also look at managing objects in single administrative steps. There will be some interesting demonstrations along the way, including a look at how to create and manage recipients from both the shell and the console, and how to delegate permissions in Exchange so that an administrator can perform only the appropriate management tasks. As with most TechNet sessions, some prior experience of Microsoft technologies or similar technologies is always helpful. Here's a brief overview on what would be helpful, but not essential for this session. As we go through today's session, you'll hear various Microsoft acronyms and terminology. While we will explain all new terms related to today's session, there are some general terms from the industry or from other versions of Microsoft products that we may not spend time on. To help you out, we have listed the areas that it may be helpful to be familiar with, either prior to this session or to reference afterwards. It would be helpful to have some IT administration experience with Microsoft Exchange Server 2003, Exchange 2000 Server, or Exchange Server 5.5. To cover the topics mentioned and keep the session flow going, we have divided the session into the following agenda items. The agenda breaks down into three sections. In the first part, we'll take a look at the new tools provided for Exchange administration, the console and the shell. Next, we'll discuss administering recipients, a task which is probably close to all administrators' hearts. But as you'll see, things are a lot easier in Exchange 2007, and a lot better too. Finally, we'll move on to look at how delegation of administration works to get a handle on Exchange administrative permissions. In terms of demos, we'll be sure to show you how to perform any given admin task in both the console and the shell. We're not going to get into complex scripts today, although there is a session on that, but rather stick to one-liners. Before we get started on the main session, let's quickly review the design goals the product group had in mind when considering Exchange Server administration. The Exchange product group wanted to make sure that IT professionals get what they need. Many of you have said that email is the most important application in your organization, that without it you face big problems. You also say that the current systems are far too complex and expensive to maintain, that many of the day-to-day tasks you perform would be better suited to scripted automation, rather than tedious manual configuration. Exchange 2007 is all about giving you that control. It's also worth remembering that a distributed application like Exchange costs money to administer because of the expertise you need to hire to maintain it. A key goal with 2007 was to reduce the complexity of administering the system, thereby reducing the cost. The product group wanted to make it simple and intuitive. Exchange 2007 lowers the expertise needed and the time taken to learn about the new management interface, so you can start administering straight away. By more effectively organizing actions and maintaining strict consistency in the interface, you can administer more quickly and efficiently. The GUI has been significantly streamlined, as we'll see, but that's not everything. Automation. Many of you spend a good time on performing repetitive or bulk operations and trying to find an easy, efficient way of doing this. The GUI is not suited to this type of task, and although scripting is available for earlier versions of Exchange, there is often a steep learning curve for administrators. So Exchange 2007 aims to make automation easy with the provision of a new management shell. We'll see that this is achieved first by ensuring that both the console and the shell are built on a common management platform. Secondly, by making sure that the command line interface is powerful. It becomes a truly viable alternative to the GUI, even for the relatively inexperienced admins. Finally, for those administrators who don't want to become expert programmers in some possibly esoteric scripting language, we have one-liners. The syntax is so intuitive and so straightforward that a few words, a single command, can perform the same tasks that were only possible with complex management scripts in previous versions of Exchange. Perhaps another thing to remember is that the shell can do more than the console. What the product group has put into the console is the standard day-to-day tasks that 80% of you perform on a regular basis. The infrequently used, more advanced stuff is only configurable on the shell. This keeps things simple. Let's get started with a quick glance at the agenda. In the first part of the session, we look at the new management tool set. This includes both the new Exchange Management Console and the Exchange Management Shell. We'll look at the console first and contrast it with the earlier Exchange System Manager. You'll be impressed at how streamlined and easy to navigate the console has become. Next, we'll run through a discussion of the Exchange Management Shell. This command line management interface will quickly become your favorite administrative tool as you learn to create powerful and flexible scripts to perform those repetitive tasks that all administrators have to spend their time on. Let's get started. When the Exchange product group set about designing the new management console interface, they wanted to provide consistency across the management toolset. This includes the management console, the management shell, and the EX setup command. Whenever you make administrative changes in Exchange, the Exchange store, the registry, and the Active Directory are configured. The heart of everything is a management engine, which is driven by Windows PowerShell commands, or CMD LEDs. Command line programs, like the Exchange Management Shell and EX Setup, tap directly into this engine. Whereas when you use the Exchange Management Console, your actions are processed by WinForms, and the PowerShell data provider before being passed to the PowerShell engine. The important thing to remember here is that however you choose to administer the system, from the command line using shell or from a wizard in the console, you're actually executing the same PowerShell commands. This consistency makes the system powerful and extensible. Before we take a look at the new console and shell, let's review the old system manager. Anyone who has ever managed an Exchange server would likely have seen the Exchange System Manager, ESM. As Exchange has evolved, ESM has gotten more complicated. The hierarchy has gotten deeper and deeper, making it harder to locate the things you need, nor is it all that intuitive. Product group felt it was time for a change, and while reworking the under-the-hood stuff, they took the opportunity to rework the interface too. The first thing you'll notice is the clean interface. The console tree contains the navigation hierarchy. Things are grouped logically in four work centers. Recipient configuration, which contains all the recipient objects like mailboxes, contacts, and distribution groups. The Server Configuration Center, which groups servers by role, bridgehead, client access, mailbox, and unified messaging. The Organization Configuration Work Center, in which you can administer organizational settings like transport rules, mailbox folders, and unified messaging dial plans and IP gateways. And finally, the Toolbox, which contains shortcuts to useful tools, like the Best Practice Analyzer or the Queue Viewer. As you select items in the console tree, the results pane updates. For example, if the mailbox role is selected in the Server Configuration Work Center, the results pane lists all the servers that host that role. The work pane reflects the item in the results pane. In this case, child objects of the mailbox server roles are shown. The action pane allows you to perform an administrative action on the object selected in either the results or work panes. You can also access the same actions from the context menu of many items. When you choose an action, a wizard will run that guides you through the management process you've selected. The console allows the administrator to perform tasks using an intuitive wizard interface. Although the details on each wizard will vary, they are consistent in many respects. They all include a navigation bar on the left to enable you to determine where you are in the management process, and a summary screen. Right before you perform the selected action, it allows you to be sure you're ready to proceed. It's a bit like the what-if parameter in Shell, which we'll cover shortly. On the summary page, the wizard interface will also provide PowerShell one-liners. Remember that we said the console was based on the shell. Well, you can take advantage of that. The summary screen will expose the PowerShell commands that are being used in the wizard. If you like, you can cut and paste the syntax into the shell or into an MSH file for reuse later. Now let's have a look at the shell. This new interface has been provided to make your life a lot easier. It may be a command line tool, but the shell can accomplish all the tasks that the console can, but quicker, easier, and with less intervention from you. A GUI-based administration tool like the Exchange Management Console is great for ad hoc administrative tasks, but it's not ideally suited for repetitive tasks. Those situations are where the Exchange Management Shell is helpful. Based on the Microsoft Windows Server PowerShell technology, the shell builds on the operations that are available in the Exchange Management Console and extends your administrative capabilities. Some things can only be achieved through the shell. Unix administrators will be familiar with the term shell. A shell provides a powerful, flexible, and scriptable command line experience that allows you to perform any administrative task that you can perform using the console. The difference between using the shell and the console is that the shell is ideally suited to repetitive tasks. PowerShell is not a text-based shell, but instead uses an object-based model on the Microsoft.NET platform. It has a substantial number of built-in commands that provide you with a powerful toolset for script-based administration. The shell is ideally suited for performing repetitive bulk operations. If you have to create mailboxes for 1,000 user accounts, the Exchange Management Console process would be slow and tedious, but you can achieve the same objective with a few simple commands. And if you save these commands to a file, you can reuse your scripts later. The shell provides object-oriented data handling. All output from all the commands in the Exchange Management Shell is an object. All output from the commands can be acted upon and processed by other commands with little or no manipulation. Commands in a particular feature set accept output from other commands in that same feature set and without manipulation. When you want to perform complex processes or automate functions for help desk account management, performance monitoring, or other automated administrative tasks, the Exchange Management Shell provides a powerful object model environment based on the .NET platform. Namespaces provide access to groups of objects like the file system, registry, local certificate store, and variables. Pipelining helps you use output from one command as input in other commands. This lets you easily perform bulk operations based on the criteria applied to filtering commands, which then supply the objects to be modified to commands down the pipe. This feature is a primary reason why the Exchange Management Shell makes it possible to reduce dozens of lines of code to a single chain of commands. The Exchange Management Shell provides transparent access to the commands that are available through the command prompt, cmd.exe. You can even take the output of cmd.exe commands and perform actions based on that output, or integrate that output into data that you provide to another command. To improve security, the Exchange Management Shell requires that all scripts are digitally signed before they are allowed to run. This requirement prevents malicious parties from inserting a harmful script into the Exchange Management Shell. Only scripts that you specifically trust are allowed to run, helping you protect you and your organization. But why use the shell? If both the console and the shell allow you to perform the same tasks, one graphically and one from the command line, why go to the, albeit minimal, hassle of learning the syntax? In a word, one-liners, pretty much everything that can be done in a line or even a few words, something that may take a lot of mouse clicks in the GUI, or that requires you to ask a question such as, does this mailbox meet the criteria for moving to the new store, can now be constructed using a simple command that asks the question and then performs the required action. If you start by using the console, you'll find that the summary page of all wizards presents you with the shell commands being used to perform the requested action. Code that you can cut and paste and save into an MSH file for reuse. In Exchange 5, when you wanted to view the advanced properties of objects like recipients, you needed to open the admin program in raw mode to expose these properties. To some extent, that's still true in Exchange 2000 and 2003, where you might need the use of the ADSI edit to gain access to certain objects and their properties. In the shell, it's always raw mode. You can access everything, always. And it's safe. The script allows you to test what you're about to do. Execute your command with the what if. Make sure the action you requested was the action you wanted to request. When you're happy, you can execute the command without the what-if protection. We'll have a look at this shortly in the demonstrations. And don't forget, the shell isn't just about scripting, although it's that as well. It's interactive. You can execute statements one by one at the prompt. You can save them as scripts, of course, but you don't have to. Open the shell, start typing commands that retrieve information about objects, and then configure them. You can't do that with Visual Basic. Let's take another look at the agenda. As Exchange admins, you're all fairly familiar with recipient objects. Users with mailboxes, users with email addresses, contacts, distribution lists, public folders, and so on. Exchange 2007 supports the same sorts of recipient objects, but with some differences. In this section, we'll look at the different recipient types and how you can administer them in the console or the shell. We'll also spend some time discussing the new recipient types, such as resources. Resources, for example, meeting rooms, will make booking meetings a whole lot easier. And although this session doesn't deal specifically with calendaring, we will discuss these new recipient types and their properties, as well as how to establish and administer them. Let's start with a review of the design challenges facing the product group when thinking about the recipient management in Exchange 2007. We've had a lot of feedback on the separation between Exchange administration and Active Directory administration that's been pretty poor. What this means is that an Exchange administrator, essentially a messaging application admin, has been able to perform administrative tasks that impinge on the Active Directory infrastructure. For some customers, that may be okay. In fact, for some of you, it's desirable. Small businesses tend not to have separate messaging and Active Directory admin teams. But for a larger organization, this is an issue. So the product group needed to make sure that when separation was required, it was possible. The split permissions model has been hard to implement in 2003 and was not available out of the box. In 2007, it is easy to establish and is implemented by default. You won't find yourself downloading extensive white papers on the subject of having to fiddle with ACLs to get this to work. It's ready and it's simple. As you know, when you come to deploy a new server, you need to perform the same set of tasks you always do. Create a storage group, create and mount stores within the group, create new user accounts, create associated mailboxes, and so forth. This was never really easy to do with Exchange 2003 without resorting to a lot of coding. With 2007, this automated user management and server provision can be achieved with a small set of simple commands, the shell one-liners. Problems with the recipient update service have been solved in 2007. We all know what the RUS does, managing email addresses and address lists. But many of you complained about the black box nature of this service. Its non-deterministic behavior made it problematic for you. You won't need to wait 15 minutes for a new user's exchange properties to get populated by the RUS. It's simpler, it's deterministic, and it works straight away. If you think back to Exchange 5, administrative delegation was not well implemented. If you wanted someone to be able to perform administration in Exchange on a particular site, you needed to grant this person or a group he or she belonged to the appropriate role-based permissions on the organization container, the site container, and the site configuration container. And if you wanted to control which server this person could manage or which mailboxes, there was no way of doing that. Change 2000-2003 improved on this and allowed you more accurately and specifically targeted permissions with admin groups and, more specifically, with ACLs. But in reality, few people implemented admin groups. So, with Exchange 2007, admin role delegation needs to be more granular and in line with what's possible with Active Directory. In fact, in 2007, you can now delegate at per server level, so the control is much more granular than in 2003. So let's see what's new in Recipient Management 2007. So 2007 supports split permissions within a single forest. What this means that is an Exchange administrator may be able to mailbox enable a user or mailbox enable a contact, but can't create the user or contact within Active Directory, unless you want this person to be able to do so. In addition, you now have the ability to delegate recipient management to a lower level administrator. This no longer needs to be a person capable of creating Active Directory accounts, because they're merely creating some Exchange objects and modifying properties of Active Directory objects. But if you want to have a single administrative tier, the GUI also provides the ability not only to mail enable or mailbox enable objects, but also gives the option of creating the user accounts, if you have permissions to do so. So, to summarize this point, there is separation by default out of the box, which allows you to assign lower level admins for recipient management. But for those who are happy with single administrator as common with smaller business organization, that's fine, too, because the toolset can support that. It's frustrating when you have to create mailboxes to have to wait for the recipient update service to modify the Active Directory object with the Exchange properties that you need. Often you'll have to jump back into the system manager and kick the RUS into action. That's no longer necessary. When you provision a user, the change is affected immediately. We call this instant on recipients. When the command finishes in the shell, the mailbox is ready. Filtering allows administrators to see only the objects that's relevant to them. In large messaging systems, finding the mailbox you want to administer is often a problem. You can use the GUI to filter for objects that you're interested in, rather than looking for the whole GAL. Although, obviously, you can view the entire GAL if you want. To make for an improved calendaring experience, the product group has added some new recipient types. There are rooms, projectors, that kind of thing. They also have special properties for some user-defined properties. For example, a room supports a capacity property. There's no point holding a meeting in a room for 10 people when it only seats 5. That's all configurable now. There's a lot of clever stuff implemented around calendaring that's outside the scope of this session, but include, for example, properties that determine who can book a room, whenever the room can auto-accept bookings, assuming it's available, and so on. Policy-based administration makes a good deal of sense for larger organizations, where the same settings need to be applied to many objects. You probably remember that the recipient policies that you could configure in Exchange 2003, which allowed you to configure email addresses for associated objects. In addition, Service Pack 1 had its more control for administrators, allowing the recipient policy to control mailbox settings. Exchange Server 2007 extended this by providing policies that manage unified messaging, email lifecycle, and active sync settings. The old recipient policies still exist, but are now called email address policies. And the mailbox management settings have been removed, so they really only provide email address functionality. Now let's look at the various recipient types. But before we run through the different recipient types, it's worth noting a significant change. In 2003, when you took a look at recipient objects in Active Directory, it didn't identify the type of the recipient. For example, is that user mailbox enabled or just mail enabled? In 2007, a visual indicator is provided so that at one glance you can see what type of object it is, whether it's a shared mailbox, a legacy mailbox, or whatever. 2003 didn't support these different types very well. You set up a resource type mailbox the same way you did for a regular user. However, although you knew that they were different, the system saw them essentially as the same. In 2007, you explicitly defined the type of mailbox. The mailbox called Conference Room 1 is a meeting room with a capacity of 8, explicit instead of implicit. Finally, because of this explicit typing, you can filter mailboxes based on type. So when you want to perform a maintenance on secondary mailboxes only, you can sort and filter based on that type alone. This is handy for extensive organizations. Now let's go ahead and look at the different recipient types, starting with mailboxes. A mailbox user is simply a user with a mailbox, while a shared mailbox is a mailbox shared between several users or a secondary mailbox for a single user. Secondary mailboxes can only be configured through the shell at present. As you may know, Exchange Server 2007 supports three distinct Active Directory configurations: a single forest topology, a multiple forest topology, and a resource forest topology. A linked mailbox is a user with a mailbox in the resource forest. Lastly, a legacy mailbox is an Exchange 2000N mailbox. Let's have a look at resource mailboxes. Exchange 2007 introduces lots of calendaring improvements, and part of this is the explicit typing of resource-based mailboxes. Exchange 2007 adds schema extensions to Active Directory that allow you to mark a mailbox as room or equipment, and you can put a particular property on those, such as room capacity, the make of TV or projector that you have. Custom defined properties can include anything such as a widescreen TV. Then, when you're in the address book, there's a specific room-based address book that you can search. So a conference room mailbox is a mailbox that represents a room, while an equipment mailbox is a mailbox that represents some sort of tangible piece of equipment, like a projector or a TV. Contacts are objects in Active Directory that are not represented with a user account. However, they can be mail-enabled. A mail-enabled contact is a contact with an email address outside your organization. You'll establish mail-enabled contacts for frequently used external recipients. For those situations, when you have a user who is part of your organization who doesn't need a mailbox, you can establish an email address for him or her without needing to create an associated mailbox. That's known as a mail-enabled user, and essentially a user account with an external email address. Currently, you can only establish mail-enabled users through the shell. There are four types of distribution groups, formerly known as distribution list, or DLs, supported. These are mail-enabled universal security group, which is a universal security group that can receive mail; mail-enabled universal distribution group, which is a universal distribution group that can receive mail; mail-enabled non-universal group, which is a domain-local global security or global distribution group that can receive mail; mail-enabled dynamic distribution group, which is a query-based distribution group that can receive email. Obviously, we can say can receive mail. That really means that the underlying members can receive mail, as distribution groups do not have mailboxes themselves. Finally, we have a public folder recipient type, which is a mail-enabled public folder. You can only mail-enable public folders using the shell of present. It's also worth noting that public folders are being de-emphasized with this version of Exchange. What this means is that the services that relied upon public folders, such as free, busy information for calendaring, have been reworked to utilize other services. There is now nothing in Exchange Server that needs public folders. However, in mixed environments, that is, those that contain a mix of 2003-2007 servers, or a mix of 2003-2007 clients, you may have an investment in public folders to support your own collaborative applications. You can continue to use public folders in this way, but in Exchange 2007 deployed in a non-mixed environment, public folders are not available. Let's expand on the filtering options available. Both the server and the recipient configuration work centers can filter objects. Every column that is filterable is viewable with customizable columns. In addition, recipient result size defaults to 1,000, but this can be changed. There is support for up to 10 expressions. Operators include, but not limited to, equals, does not equals, contains, not contain, and so on. Also, both and or operators are supported. And support is the default, while OR is obtained by having two consecutive expressions with the same field. Subsequent expressions are joined by AND. This filtering allows you to see only objects that you care about administering. A subset of objects can always be preserved using the Save Filter option. You can get the same object list time and again without rebuilding the expressions in the filter. In addition, filter coupled with result size can obtain all similar objects with minimal performance impact. This filtering is going to make your use of the console even easier. Now let's take a look at scoping. The Recipient Configuration Work Center supports both domain and forest-wide scoping. This allows you to look for recipients either in your local domain or anywhere in the organization. This is a particular benefit if you only have administrative responsibility for a part of the forest rather than the whole. The domain scope is the default behavior and is determined by the domain in which the server is a member. This means that only recipients in the selected domain can be found or displayed. Reference recipients such as members, delegates, owners and managers are exempt from this restriction. The forest scope can display and find all recipients with the forest, which provides a complete view of the GAL. In addition, result size is limited to 1,000, but you can override the setting if need be. By default, the console uses the same list of global catalog servers and domain controllers that the installed Exchange services use. This reduces issues related to replication. These improvements allow you to see only the objects you want to administer and reduces the performance impact on both server and client running the console. There's one more thing. When you go to select an object using the 2003 picker, you have to enter the name of the object, or your best guess, in a box. To search using the picker, you need to click a few buttons to get a list up, which is a time-consuming task. With 2007, you get a list straight away. A minor, but in some ways a significant change. Time for our first demonstration. In this first demo, we'll look at using filtering and scoping in both the console and from the shell to select recipients that you want to administer. We'll begin by loading up the Exchange Management Console. The first thing to notice is how the new Exchange Management Console groups things logically. There are four work centers. The Organization Configuration Work Center contains objects that have an organization-wide effect. For example, email lifecycle folders. The Server Configuration Work Center contains all the servers within your organization grouped by role, mailbox, client access, hub transport, and unified messaging. The Recipient Configuration Work Center, which we'll be focusing on in this session, contains all the recipients in the organization, grouped conveniently by type, mailbox, distribution group, mail contacts, and disconnected mailboxes. The toolbox contains disaster recovery and performance tools, together with message tracking tools and the best practices analyzer. We won't be looking at the toolbox during this session, but it's handy to know that all the tools are located in one place, grouped logically in the console. Let's switch back to the Recipient Configuration Work Center. Currently, because we have selected the Recipient Configuration Work Center, in the Results pane, you can see all the recipients in the organization. As this is not a production system, there aren't too many. But if you were using Exchange Server in a large business, the number of recipients could be quite large. Even so, there are more objects than will fit on a page. If we click Mailbox, only those users that have mailboxes on the system are displayed. If we want to see just the distribution groups, there's a folder in the console tree for them. The same for mail-enabled contacts and disconnected mailboxes. A disconnected mailbox is a mailbox user that is not associated with an Active Directory user account. So you can already see that different types of objects can be managed more easily. Within the Exchange Management Console, each type of object has a different visual indicator. For example, mailbox. Mail-enabled contact. And distribution group. That's also true of objects that represent resources, like conference or training rooms. Let's verify that. We'll create a conference room mailbox. Let's select Room Mailbox. And now let's select an existing user account. In this case, Meeting Room Supervisor. User accounts associated with resources, such as rooms, should be disabled. If you use the new mailbox command from the console or shell, the account is automatically disabled for you. Otherwise, you must do that manually through Active Directory users and computers. The reason is that no actual person will log on interactively as this resource. Rather, it will be managed by a delegate, where appropriate, or entirely automatically by the system in terms of automatically accepted appointments for rooms. Now let's configure the mailbox settings. Then we'll check the summary, which looks correct. Finally, we will create the mailbox. The visual indicator is different, and the Recipient Type Details column reports on the type of the object. As we saw in the session, recipient types are now explicitly defined. Shared mailbox, link mailbox, resource mailbox. And because the type is explicit, you can easily locate and manage the appropriate object. This is a significant improvement over what was possible with 2003. Let's take a look at filter. When you have an extensive number of recipient objects to manage, the list can be overwhelming. It helps to group different types of objects together, but with filtering, we can go a little further at locating the specific objects we want. Let's create a simple filter. In this case, filter by recipient type details. We'll create a filter for mail-enabled contacts. Let's see what the filtered list looks like. We can also add additional expressions. Let's filter further to be more specific. Let's look for contacts starting with the letter L. Let's see what that looks like. If we wanted to look at all the recipients that started with L, whether they were contacts or something else, we don't need to start over. We can just remove the first expression. With the filtering capabilities, you can quickly locate the object that you want to manage. Clearly, in large organizations, this will make a significant difference to the time you spend on managing recipient objects. Let's reset the list. In an enterprise organization with thousands of users in multiple domains, you may have administrative responsibility for only one domain. Aside from filtering, we've already seen it's also possible to modify the scope of the recipient configuration work center. The default is the current domain, but you can also view the entire forest, optionally specifying a global catalog server to service the request. Clearly, since the demonstration system is based on a single domain forest, there is no difference in the objects returned by this rescoping. There is also an option for defining the number of objects returned by the recipient configuration work center. The default is 1000, but you can configure other values as needed. We'll stick to the default value. That concludes this short demonstration on locating recipients. So let's return to the presentation. Now let's take a look at managing recipients. We talked earlier about split permissions and the ability to separate Active Directory management from Exchange administration. When you come to create mailboxes, that's a great example of when split permissions might apply. If you want to create mailboxes for user accounts that already exist, or when you want to remove mailboxes but retain the user account with which they are associated, you'll do that with Enable or Disable. Enable adds the Exchange attributes to the existing Active Directory object. For example, you might Mailbox Enable or Mail Enable a user account. Conversely, the Disable command will remove the Exchange attributes, returning to an Active Directory object to a non-Exchange state. Note that the disabled mailbox in the store database will eventually fall under mailbox retention and will be purged. To perform either an enable or a disable action, the Exchange admin must have sufficient privileges granted on the user accounts, such as account operator, as this person will be adding or removing attributes from the user account. When you don't need or want to split permissions, you can use the new and remove mailbox command. Again, the Exchange admin must have sufficient privileges granted in this case, the ability to create and delete user accounts in Active Directory. The new command creates the Active Directory object, and then mail enables or mailbox enables it. The remove command can behave in one or two ways. By default, the remove will delete the Active Directory object. The mailbox object in the store MDB will fall under the mailbox retention and will eventually be purged. But the permanent option removes the Active Directory object, and the mailbox object in the store database will be purged immediately, although this is possible from the shell only. Let's have a look at these operations in the next demo. In this demo, we'll use both the enable, disable, and the new remove options to administer mailboxes and distribution groups. We'll also look at creating contacts. First, let's look at creating and managing mailboxes. To create the degree of separation between Active Directory and Exchange Server Administration that some administrators want or need, there are two ways to create a mailbox. The new mailbox command creates a new mailbox and the associated Active Directory account, while the enable mailbox command adds the Exchange-specific attributes to an existing Active Directory user account. Let's start with a look at the former, enabling a mailbox for an existing user account. We want to create a standard user mailbox. Locate the user account, in this case, Mike Nash. Nothing to change on the mailbox settings page, so let's click Next. We then confirm the settings. The underlying shell command is displayed on the completion page. You will notice that the enable mailbox command was used to create Mike's mailbox. Now let's create another mailbox using the new mailbox command. This time we need select new user. A dialog box appears into which we need to provide information. First, we put our user's account into the correct OU, sales. The first name is Kari, the last name is Heinzen, the logger name is Heinzen K. Enter the usual password. Let's move on. We don't need to change defaults for the mailbox settings. Again, we conform our selections. The underlying script used the new mailbox command. When you use the new mailbox or enable mailbox commands, you need to know what parameter to specify. The way that the console shows you what it did is helpful in getting up to speed with the shell. You can even cut and paste the whole lot into the shell. Let's make a mental note of the following required parameter, which we'll see in the next part of the demo database. When you create a mailbox, you must specify where the mailbox is stored. Next, let's use the shell to create mailboxes. The beauty of the shell is that tasks that would be time-consuming in the console are effortless. With a few simple commands piped together, you can create a powerful script. Let's open the shell. What we'll do is create a simple series of commands, joined by a pipe, that will create mailboxes for existing users in the marketing OU. We start by using the getUser command, but extend that by specifying the distinguished name of users that we're interested in. In this instance, users with a distinguished name ending in OU equals marketing, DC equals NW traders, and DC equals .com, and DC equals com. Then we pipe the results to the enable mailbox command, and specify the database parameter. That's it. Let's see if that works. Well, we got an error on the first user, because Mike Nash already has a mailbox. We created it earlier. But the operation proceeded fine after that. 10 mailboxes enabled within a few seconds. Let's see how easy it is to move mailboxes. We enter the get mailbox command, and then filter that by identifying which mailboxes, in this case, the ones in the marketing OU, and then piping that to the move mailbox command, specifying the target database. Let's see if that works. Well, when that's finished, we'll go back to the GUI to find out whether it was successful. Of course, when you move your mailboxes with lots of content, it will take considerably longer than it did here. The important thing is the simplicity of the command. Now let's create a filter, in this case based on database name. All the marketing users are now housed on the secondary database. Let's remove that filter. In this segment, we'll look at creating distribution groups, formerly known as distribution lists in earlier versions of Exchange. We'll start with a simple distribution group for a universal distribution group that already exists in Active Directory. In essence, we're mail-enabling the group. As with other recipient types, if you have administrative permissions in both Active Directory and Exchange Server, you can create the group and mail-enable it simultaneously. Otherwise, the Active Directory administrator can create the group, and you can mail-enable it. Pay attention to the shell commands generated by the console on the completion page of the wizard. Okay, let's get started. We're going to mail-enable the universal group in the marketing OU. The group exists already and contains all the users in the marketing OU. Let's just select the group. Nothing needs to change on this page, so let's confirm these settings. The summary page allows us to verify the settings. If they look correct, we can create the group. The enable distribution group command was used to create the group because it already existed in Active Directory. Now let's look at creating a dynamic distribution group. Again, using the console, dynamic distribution groups were introduced in Exchange Server 2003. They do not have a fixed membership list as regular groups have. Rather, their membership is determined at the point of routing. The Hub Transport Server executes the stored LDAP query and determines the current membership from the results of that query. The query can be simple, such as all users in a certain OU, or as complex as you need. In essence, you're creating a filter of the recipients, and the results of the filter is deemed the membership of the group for routing purposes. We'll create a simple filter for our group. Let's start by launching the wizard. Let's create a group called Tailspin Toy Sales. Northwind Traders has a sister company, Tailspin Toys. Contacts exist in the Tailspin Toys OU that represents sales users in Tailspin Toys. All the other sales users are the sales OUs. Let's use the wizard to configure a dynamic group for contacts in the Tailspin Toys OU. We don't need to configure any conditions on the conditions page, so we'll click Next. Finally, we'll create the group. Then we'll click Finish to complete the process. Now let's run through a quick segment on creating contacts. In this instance, we'll create a contact in Active Directory and mail-enable it using the new contact command. We go into the contacts container in the console tree and start the wizard from the action pane. A quick note, the action pane contains things that you also locate during the context menu of the item or object. That is, the action pane displays actions that are also available by right-clicking the object. Because we're going to create the contact and mail-enable it, we'll select New on the introduction page. We'll put the contact into Tailspin Toys OU. The contact is called Tad Orman. We need to define his email address, which is ormant@tailspintoys.com. Let's proceed. As always, a quick look at the shell command shows that the new command was used rather than the enable command. In fact, we can copy that to the shell, make a quick change, and execute the command. Let's paste the page into Notepad and make some changes. We'll create a contact called TadOrman2. Once we've removed the unnecessary lines, we can work on the shell command. Then we'll paste that into the shell. Let's open the shell. If we right-click anywhere in the Open Shell window, we can paste the modified command. Of course, we can always save the command as a MSH script for reuse later. Now, we just press Enter to execute the command. We've easily created a contact by reusing a shell command that the console generated for us. Okay, let's take a look at removing and disabling recipients. As with other tasks, if you lack Active Directory permissions, you can only disable mailboxes, groups, and contacts. If you're both an Exchange administrator and an Active Directory administrator, you can remove these recipients. We'll start by removing a mailbox. We'll remove Kara's mailbox and the underlying Active Directory account. Then we confirm the action. Now let's disable a mailbox. Again, we'll use another sales user, this time Douglas Curran, and confirm that action too. Now let's switch to the shell and use a get user command to return the user accounts to the sales OU. We'll pipe the get user command to select which user we want, in this instance everyone in sales. Douglas's account is still present, but he has no mailbox. Kara's user account has been deleted. Let's return to the presentation. The next few slides, we're going to discuss the management changes to be made for each of the recipient types, starting with the changes made to mailbox management. When you need to perform a restore mailbox operation from the recovery storage group, you use a wizard, which looks much like the Exchange Best Practices Analyzer in form, which you'll find in the toolbox in the console. Another thing you'll quickly notice is that, from the console, email addresses have been simplified. There are only two, SMTP and custom. It's just a way of keeping things simple and useful. Most people don't need other types of addresses, so it just complicates things by showing these unused types, like X400 or MS Mail. If you want to handle more types, that's possible, but from the shell. There are other advanced settings also configurable from the shell only. These include POP and IMAP settings for mailboxes. Shared mailbox management, the configuration of mailbox permissions, such as send as, read permission, change permission, and so on, and mailbox statistics and logons. Let's see what's new with the distribution groups. The most significant change is that the product group wanted to avoid problems in different group scopes: universal, global, local, and the issues arise from DL expansion under 2003. Outline a scenario. If you mail enable global groups in a multiple domain organization, the originating server in domain X needs to contact the domain controller for the global group homed in domain Y to determine membership. Because membership of global groups is not available in the global catalog, by limiting you to universal groups only, this avoids a problem. So the new or enable commands only allow for the creation or selection of universal distribution groups, not global or local groups. Now obviously, you may have an existing investment in non-universal distribution groups, that is global and perhaps even local groups. You can manage their properties, so you should be looking to convert these groups at some point. Bear in mind that not all conversions are possible, so some additional work around existing membership may be required. For example, if you try to rescope a local group that contains another local group, the operation will fail, because a local group cannot belong to a universal group. Also, if you attempt to rescope a global group that belongs to another global group, that operation will also fail, because a universal group cannot belong to a global group. These restrictions aside, the operation for conversion is a few mouse clicks. Adding group membership requires the intended recipient to be mail-enabled or mailbox-enabled. Otherwise, they can't be added to the distribution group. As with mailboxes, email address boxes have been simplified to two types, SMTP and custom. Although again, you can use the shell to be more specific if you need to. From the shell, you can configure additional advanced settings, including the option that a group manager can update the group membership list. Let's have a look at dynamic groups, known in 2003 as query-based distribution lists. One of the problems with creating anything that is based on the results of a query is making sure you define the query correctly. So with 2007, the product group created some predefined filters for dynamic distribution group membership based on all recipient types. Users with mailboxes, resource mailboxes, mail-enabled contacts, and mail-enabled groups. Additional conditions supported include state or province, department, company, and so on. The predefined options are going to be sufficient for many organizations, and so make things simpler. If you want to create your own filters, you need to drop down to the shell. As with other recipient types, unless you use the shell, there are only two configurable email address types, SMTP and custom. A number of advanced custom filters can be defined in the shell, which will be visible but not editable in the GUI. Let's run through changes to email address policies. The first thing to remember is that the email address policies were known as recipient policies in 2003. In addition to defining email addresses based on the result of LDAP queries with Service Pack 1 and later, there were mailbox management settings that could be assigned with the recipient policy. Recipient policies are now email address policies. As with dynamic groups, there are some predefined filters based on all recipient types: users with mailboxes, resources with mailbox, mail-enabled contacts, and mail-enabled groups. In addition, other conditions are supported, including state or province, department and company. If you want to create your own filters for your email address policies, you'll need to get into the shell to do that. You'll be able to view your custom policies in the GUI, but changes will need to be made at the shell. The Mailbox Manager functionality has been replaced by Email Lifecycle Folder functionality and has, therefore, been removed from email address policies. There is also the ability to schedule the creation and application of email address policies for off-hour execution, which will reduce processor load by using less busy times for the policy processing. The Recipient Update Service, or RUS, is no longer needed, resulting in the reduced system processing demand. And your policy change is taking effect instantly. You don't need to wait on RUS to affect the changes you have made on your recipients. Another point is that the change you can make is deterministic. So changes to recipient properties, for example, a change to different department results in the automatic update of the email address policy. As before, policies based on filters that are outside the predefined filters need to be made using the shell. Let's look at the changes made to the address list management. As with email address policies, address lists are now based on predefined filters. Again, you can use the shell to configure advanced settings or to create your own queries for the address lists. And as before, your custom filter-based address list can be viewed in the console, but not edited here. The RUS is no longer needed to maintain address lists, and you can schedule both the creation and application of your new address list. Let's look at the changes to offline address lists. Offline address lists can still work with public folders, which is important in those mixed client situations. However, if your organization has only 2007 clients, you won't be using public folders. The products group has provided the new HTTPS-based distribution mechanism. Client Access Service run a service to pull offline address lists from the OABGen server and cache them locally as soon as they are generated. An Outlook 2007 client connects to the OAB virtual directory on the closest client access server to get its offline address list. This closeness is based on the site of the client and the site of the server. And it's also possible for you to choose which servers distribute which offline address lists. Advanced features include the ability to force an offline address list copy to a given server at a specific time, the troubleshooting the offline address list file copy process. That concludes the second part of the session, so let's return to the agenda for a moment. In this third part of the session today, we're going to look at the administrative model in the Exchange 2007, with particular emphasis on how things have changed since 2003. Let's start with a review of what's new. But first, a quick look of how things were handled in earlier versions of Exchange. For those of you who remember, Exchange 5 had its own directory service. It sat beside the Windows NT directory and can suffer from this poor integration. With regard to Exchange administration, a container known as the site created an administrative boundary. Anyone with administrative capability in a given site could administer anything within that site. If you need to create an administrative separation, you need additional sites. Unfortunately, sites were multipurpose. They also defined directory replication boundaries. As a result, your need to delegate and separate administration would also impact the messaging routing topology. The other key issue was when you had multiple sites in multiple domains, it could be tricky to get the two directory services talking properly. In essence, Exchange servers in the same site needed to also to be in the same NT domain. With Exchange 5X, things could become a little sticky when you needed to delegate administrative control. Exchange 2000 and 2003 made significant changes. First, both platforms utilized Active Directory, so there were no separate directory services to glue together. This made them functionally more stable. Second, message routing and administration were separated with the induction of routing groups. For groups of servers in a single location, and administrative groups for determining administrative control over Exchange objects. Problem was that actually delegated control to an advanced level often meant using a variety of tools, including Exchange System Manager. ADSI Edit and Active Directory uses computers to establish your administrative model. So it's going to be important with the next product release to address these complexity issues. So what's new in Exchange 2007? The first improvement is that delegation is more granular. You no longer need to grant permissions to perform specific tasks on whole administrative group containers. You can assign specific management roles, like recipient administration, right down to the server level if you wish. Actually, it's worth noting that administrative groups and routing groups are gone. If you're not supporting Exchange 2003 servers, then we'll use Active Directory sites to define the routing topology and the service availability. That is, where a client will obtain a service from, such as the nearest client access server. Again, we also have the support for split permission where that's desirable. Universal security groups have been assigned specific administrative function roles. If you like, these roles define what members of the group can do. These roles are similar to the built-in local groups used in Windows. All you need to do is add the appropriate users or groups to the roles, and that user can now perform the required tasks. This vastly simplifies delegation. It's also worth noting that your privileges and abilities are determined by who you're currently logged on as, just as it is in Windows. This is consistent with Exchange 2003. Abilities are based on the current user logon token. Let's take a closer look at this. Setup creates a universal security group for each administrative role in the forest root domain. These groups can be moved from one domain with no negative effect on the delegation. You'll find these groups in the Microsoft Exchange System Objects MESO container within the Active Directory domain naming context. There's no need to move them, but some Active Directory administrators might prefer them in another domain in the forest root, so that's possible. By using the groups to grant rights on Exchange objects and properties, it minimizes access control list, or ACL stamping. You simply add a user to the group to achieve delegation. No ACL stamping of user-specific SIDs on Exchange objects and property sets is needed. This is quick, tidy, and efficient. With regards to coinsistence, broadly speaking, it just works. Permissions are additive. However, there is one caveat, which is that migration from administrative groups to server admins will be necessary, as admin groups aren't supported in Exchange 2007. Next, let's have a look at property sets. To support this delegation model, it was necessary to group appropriate object attributes together in property sets. This means that you can grant rights on a collection of attributes or properties rather than having to do so on an individual attributes required for, say, mailbox management. The recipient admin role is granted read-write permissions on mailbox-enabled or mail-enabled Active Directory users, groups, and contacts without any Windows delegation. It also means that you can avoid excessive ACLs, which keep the system neat and tidy. The Exchange Information property set includes all Exchange attributes on recipients, except for the attributes in the Exchange Personal Information property set. The Exchange Personal Information property set, which includes some rather sensitive information, can only be read by the object owner and administrator. The data hierarchy breaks down like this. Global, which is located in the Active Directory configuration naming context, it therefore gets replicated to all domain controllers and global catalog servers in the forest. It's located in the configuration service Microsoft Exchange. An example of this type of data is an address list. It essentially contains all data not associated with a server or recipient. To the server level, which is also located in Active Directory configuration naming context, we have object associated with servers. This includes storage groups and databases. You find this data in configuration service Microsoft Exchange servers. Each server has a unique instance. Once again, replication is forest-wide. Finally, the recipient level, which is located in the Active Directory domain naming context as well. It's replicated to all domain controllers and global catalog servers in the forest. Its typical location is domain instance users. An example of the data here is a mailbox-enabled user and mail-enabled distribution groups. This hierarchy maps to both administrative roles and console navigation tree. The five roles Exchange Organizational Admin, which has read, write, and create rights at both the global and server scope, and read, write, write at the recipient scope. Next is the Exchange View-Only Admin, which has read writes on all three scopes. Then we have the Exchange Server Admin, who has all rights at server scope only. The Exchange Recipient Admin has read and write rights to recipient data. Finally, we have the Windows Admin, which has full rights on recipient data. It's worth noting that the Exchange Recipient Admin, by default, can't create Active Directory users, groups, or contact objects, but can mailbox enable or mail enable these objects. However, the Windows admin can create Active Directory users, groups, and contact objects, and can also mailbox enable or mail enable them because Exchange does not set any deny ACLs. We have two roles, the Exchange Organizational Admin and the Exchange View Only Admin, which are essentially the same as under 2003. However, the Exchange Server Admin role and the Exchange Recipient Admin role are new. Let's summarize the effective rights for these new roles. The server admin has read permissions on the MS-EXCH configuration container. This object only read permissions on the organization container, this object and its subcontainers, and read, write, create permissions on the server instance container, this object and its subcontainers. The recipient admin has read, write permissions to the Exchange Information Property Set, read, write permissions to the Exchange Personal Information Property Set, and read-write permissions on the following attributes on recipient object, admin display name, display name, legacy exchange DN, mail, proxy addresses, show in address book, text encoded or address, garbage collection period, public delegates, public display name printable. In our last demo, we'll take a look at the delegating admin roles. In this demonstration, we're going to see how to delegate administrative control from the console and how to set advanced permissions using the shell. In this segment, we'll use the Delegate Control Wizard from the console to assign Exchange Administrator permissions to other users. First, we'll create a new Active Directory group for delegation purposes. We'll place the group in the user's container and make it a universal security group, which gives us the widest possible scope for administrative purposes. We'll add three users, Andy, Frank, and Karen, to the group. They're all in the sales OU. Next, we need to open the console. We click the organizational object. We can use the link in the action pane to launch the delegate wizard. There are three roles that can be delegated: Exchange Organization Admin role, Exchange Recipient Admin role, and the Exchange Server Admin role. Let's choose Recipient Admin. Let's choose the group to which we will delegate control. It's always pretty good practice to use a group, even if it only contains a single individual. This is because users tend to move around organizations, and subsequently, all you need to do is add or remove users from the appropriate management groups. You won't need to rerun the delegate wizard. We'll select the Recipient Admin's group that we just created and perform the delegation by clicking Add. That's all we need to do. Let's give that a test by running the console as Andy Teal. First, we'll create a new customized recipient management console for the recipient admins. Let's close the standard Exchange Management Console and open Exchange Management Console in author mode. We can do that from the Run menu. Next, we'll open a new window from the Recipient Configuration object. Then we'll configure the options. Give the console a title and save the console to all users programs so that anyone can access it on this computer. Now we'll load the modified console using run as Andy. Just to give things a quick test, we'll have Andy add a new mailbox. Now let's create Kara's mailbox, again using the new mailbox command. We'll just complete the details as before, putting her account into the sales OU. Enter the first name Kari, and the last name Hensign, and a login name of Hensign K. Enter the usual password and click Next. We don't need to change the defaults for the mailbox settings. Everything looks okay. We've encountered an error because Andy is an Exchange recipient admin and does not have the necessary permissions in Active Directory to create user accounts. To resolve that issue, the Active Directory administrator would need to delegate control over user accounts in the Sales OU for Andy Teal or for a group which he belongs to. Let's see if Andy can enable a mailbox for the existing user. Previously, we disabled the mailbox for Douglas Curran. So let's see if Andy can enable it again. Let's locate the user account, in this case Douglas Curran. Nothing to change on the mailbox settings page, so let's click Next. We can confirm our settings, and that action was successful. Andy can enable mailboxes and other recipient objects, but cannot create new recipient objects. In this presentation, we talked about administrative separation, the ability to keep the Active Directory configuration separate from the Exchange administration. We've clearly seen that here. As you know, the console is built on top of the shell, which means that everything that you can do in the console, you can also do in the shell. In fact, there's quite a bit you can only do through the shell. Let's spend the last part of this demo looking at the managing permissions and roles from the shell. Let's start with seeing what roles have been delegated. The recipient admins group that we created in the last part of the demo has the recipient admin role assigned to it. Pretty easy to grant roles from the shell too. Let's add the org admin role to the domain's admins and verify that it worked. You can choose between the org admin, recipient admin, server admin, and view only admin roles. The view only admin role is not currently configurable through the console. Although that may be added in a later build, it's also worth noting that you need to specify the scope parameter when you set at the server admin role, the scope being the servers that the role applies to. Let's now have a look at assigning specific permissions through the shell. For example, suppose we want to assign full control on a mailbox to another user account. We can do that through the shell. Let's start by viewing the permissions on existing mailboxes. We use the get mailbox permission command for that. That returns quite a list. You can be more specific and look at the permissions for a specific mailbox. Let's try that. Now let's grant Andy some permissions on Anton's mailbox. Let's see the permissions assigned to Andy again. You can see how easy and powerful this is. Let's return to the presentation, as this concludes the demonstration. Let's run through a short summary of today's session. In the first part of the session, we looked at the new management toolset and how improvements have been made to the Exchange Management Console. We also introduced the Exchange Management Shell. Along the way, you saw how the shell is used to configure advanced or infrequently used settings. This approach simplifies the administrative experience. We've discussed the way in which Exchange 2007 supports split admin permissions, allowing you to have separate administrative teams for Active Directory and messaging. During the second part of the session, we covered recipient management and how that has been improved with explicit typing, simpler address lists, email policies, and so on. In the last segment, we focused on Exchange admin roles, the data hierarchy, and property sets. Improvements made here enable your permissions to be assigned in a more granular and effective manner. All these improvements are about making Exchange Server easier to administer and maintain. For the most comprehensive technical information on Microsoft products, visit the TechNet website at www.microsoft.com/TechNet. You can also visit www.microsoft.com/TechNet/ITProExc106 for more information on books, courses, certifications, and other community resources that relate directly to this particular session. There are a number of other resources that are available from Microsoft. Microsoft also has instructor-led courses if you prefer the classroom-style environment. Microsoft Learning develops courseware called Microsoft Official Curriculum, MOC, which includes e-learning, Microsoft Pressbooks, workshops, clinic, and Microsoft Skills Assessment, MOC, is offered in an instructor-led environment and offers comprehensive training courses for IT professionals in supporting and implementing solutions using the Microsoft products and technologies. The course that best supports this session is Getting Started with Microsoft Exchange Server 2007 Clinic, which is available now. For more information, please visit www.microsoft.com/learning. There's also an assessment program available that can help you test your knowledge. Microsoft Skills Assessment is a free online learning tool. It is an easy way for IT professionals to check their skills. You can quickly check your skills in implementing or managing Microsoft products or business solutions. Just take a short 30-question assessment and see how well you know your stuff. The Skills Assessment includes a personalized learning plan, which includes links to Microsoft official curriculum, specific TechNet articles, Microsoft Pressbooks, and other Microsoft Learning content. There's also a way to measure how well you did compared with others who took the same assessment. Microsoft Skills Assessment is an expanding learning platform. Available now are assessments for Windows Server 2003, including Security and Patch Management, Exchange Server 2003, Windows Storage Server, Office 2003, and all VisualStudio.net. If you want to take your skills assessment to the next level, a number of certification programs are available. In a highly competitive IT job market, how can you differentiate yourself from the next candidate? The Microsoft certification program provides that edge. Earning a specific accreditation provides objective validation of the availability to successfully perform critical IT functions. Embraced by industry professionals worldwide, Microsoft certification remains one of the most effective ways to reach long-term career goals and is a surefire way for companies to develop and retain valuable IT staff. There are a number of accreditations available, starting with the basic Microsoft Certified Professional, MCP. You can choose to go on to become a fully certified systems administrator, MCSA, or a system engineer, MCSE, or a desktop specialist, MCDST. Away from the infrastructure side, the MCDBA certifications covers SQL Server products. For more information about the certification program, visit www.microsoft.com/learning/MCP. This session was brought to you by TechNet. TechNet has gone through some changes recently, which I'm sure you'll find interesting to hear about. To help explain this in more detail, I'd like to introduce Carolyn McGrath, IT Professional Marketing Manager, to cover these changes in more detail.
For IT professionals, all the resources in the TechNet program will give you the support you need to be successful with our technology. Whether you are deploying new software, managing a server environment, or troubleshooting, TechNet has a resource for you. Use the web for immediate access to documentation, knowledge base, scripts, downloads, and more. Webcasts and events will give you deep insight into specific technology topics. Keep up to date with technology news using the TechNet Flash. This is a twice-monthly newsletter that you can customize to give you information about the specific technology that interests you. With more time to read, the TechNet magazine is an excellent resource offering in-depth articles written by industry-leading technologists. If you want to ensure that you have all of the essential resources at your fingertips, the TechNet subscription is for you. It includes full version software and betas so that you can evaluate our technology at your own pace. No time bombs, so your product analysis won't time out. It includes two complimentary telephone support incidents. Talk to Microsoft technical professionals to help you with whatever challenges you may encounter with the software. That is $500 worth of value. The TechNet subscription is a great value to all IT professionals. Finally, we have TechNet VLabs. Use this to get your hands on the technology in a hosted environment. You can explore how it works, run different scenarios, and have a full product experience without having to dedicate your time to deploy and manage the hardware to do so yourself. Overall, the TechNet program has all of the resources you need to get the most out of Microsoft technology. TechNet Plus subscription, what is it? Get hands-on experience with the technology through software and betas, including Office, Windows, and servers. Support when you need it, including 2 free telephone support incidents. Easy access to information via updates, utilities, white papers, knowledge base, and more. Work on your skills at your own pace. E-learning courses and training. The TechNet Plus subscription, that's what it is. Need support? Answers are standing by. You have a choice of 3 support offerings from Microsoft. Firstly, we have online and self-help. Choose from the TechNet website, Security Center Online, Knowledge Base, Product Support Centers, the TechNet Script Center, News Groups, User Groups, and the TechNet Plus subscription. Secondly, we have assisted incidents. Assisted incidents include email support, phone support, phone support contracts, advisory services. Finally, contract-based support. Contract-based support is offered to organizations and consists of premier support or essential support. Thank you for listening to this TechNet session.